Okay, of course, we're talking about, obviously, Paul and Corinthians and all that good stuff. It actually is a continuation of basically what Skip has been talking about for the last couple of weeks, and we're just taking it a little bit, going down the road just a little bit further in the chapter. You know, of course, Paul's talking there about, you know, imitating him and because of his following of Christ and what Christ has instilled in him when he's talking to Corinthians. Obviously, looking at Paul as a leader, I want you to think about some of the leaders that you are. Who do you admire most, I would have to say, as a leader, and why? Just pick one person, or two, or three, or whatever. Just pick one and tell me what it is about that person that makes them a good leader. It can be government. It can be whatever it is. It can be a family member. Somebody pick one and tell me who it is and why. We're hurting for leaders these days, huh?
Yeah.
We are.
I had a principal once who was very fair to the kids and very fair to the teachers and compassionate. And, you know, a lot of principals, not you included, because I never had you before, sometimes will backstab you, you know.
Right.
But she never did. I mean, she was the best principal I'd ever. She was a great leader.
I never backstabbed anybody that I know of.
But some principals do, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
About one teacher and stuff like that. But she was a Christian lady and just...
I had a superintendent like that. Mm-hmm. The guy that, as far as I'm concerned, the best superintendent has ever been in Southlake was Jack Johnson, and he was that way. What you saw was what you got, and there wasn't any backing down from him. Once he knew he was right, then that's the way it was. And, you know, and he was the kind of guy that, and I've been on the other side of that, is once he got you in office, if there was a problem, boy, he could tear you to pieces. But then once you walked out that door, it was like it never happened, because he wanted you to remember it. He wasn't going to lord it over you, ever. You know, he just wanted you to know that you made a mistake and move on, period. And he never would bring it up again, unless he had to fire you. But I only had one of those conversations. It was all because I scheduled a basketball game during school one time, and that was a big no-no. Huge no-no. I blamed it on the boys' basketball coach, because he did it before I did it.
That was okay.
Yeah, well, it wasn't okay with him. I tried that, but I shut up real quick when I saw that wasn't going to work. Who else?
We had a man in my church at home that he did things that, I mean, Paul says, I want you to imitate me. This man would have never said something like that. You would want to imitate him for what he did, not because he told you that.
But right.
When he died, there were three preachers that did his funeral. And a guy walked up to me and said, if Jimmy Boswell needs three preachers to get him into heaven, the rest of us are in bad trouble. And that was from a non-member, and actually was from the principal of our school. And for somebody to make that statement about a man that you know, he didn't go to church with, but he knew from his reputation, I never heard a bad word said about the man.
That speaks a lot of volume, to say the least. Anybody else?
I got one. Tom Landry. I mean, quiet, successful, not arrogant. Seems to me that he was genuine. All the things he did. And I don't know if you can really be a real good leader without some success.
Sure.
So.
Okay. Anybody else?
Don Spradlin.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He was always, it was what was in the Bible. He stood.
He's a great man. He is a great man. There's no doubt about that. No doubt about it.
He's always nice to everybody.
Bob Hodges, too.
Absolutely.
He was one of the best.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. Yeah, I'll never forget. And Rex Boyd, right before he passed away, went over to the hospital to see him. And he and I and Betty were in there. And, man, if he'd remind me once, he reminded me again that day. He said, now, Chauncey, you know I want you to do my funeral. And I said, you know, you keep telling me that, Rex. And I said, you know, I said, have you ever written? I was trying to make him laugh because he was really hurting right then. And I said, is there anything that you want me to talk about? Because if you don't tell me something, I said, there's no telling what I'm liable to say about you. Bad, good, whatever. He looked at Betty and he said, you got a pen? Because I'd already given him a hard time about it to begin with. And once I found out Bill Tate was going to be there also, and Burgess, I said, Bill's going last. I'm not going in front of Bill Tate. But Rex is another good one, to say the least. But miss those guys, miss him, and we'll miss all those guys because sat with them quite a bit and talked with them, and obviously I consider them very silent leaders because it's what they were, it's what you need, and just so well studied that you know, knew the Bible like the back of their hands. Absolutely. Patty's dad was another one. You know, I always looked at that. If I look at examples of men in my life, then, you know, it'd have to be Patty's dad and my dad, and Patty's dad and I used to talk a lot when we go back and forth to Colorado fishing, you know, especially on the road. And I'd get off on some tangent about talking about something, and he was so quiet about everything. And then the next thing I know, I'd get this big lecture for the next 80 miles, and I thought, why don't you just shut up? You won't even cause those problems.
I guess I didn't know your dad too well. I hope I did. But the only time I was so mad, I was up at the hospital one day when he was in the hospital. And he couldn't get the back of his, the count they gave you.
Oh, yeah?
Slashed. It really irritated me.
That was going to be a pain. What do you see as far as Paul? What kind of leader was Paul?
He wasn't shy.
Definitely wasn't shy.
Well, but he lived what he said.
Okay.
He lived and breathed it.
He stood for Christ. I mean, he didn't hardly speak at all except he was talking about Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever he was involved in was 100%. If he was persecuting, it was 100%. If he was the other way, it was 100%. And he never varied from that way.
Mm-hmm. So what's he telling us then right in here between 8 and 21? You know, when it starts out, he's talking about, you know, the people with all the money. You know, and basically they've got everything. And then as he goes along there and he talks about the apostles and says that basically they're the scum of the earth. You know, and everything that they do, of course, everything is followed up by why they do what they do. You know, and if somebody gets upset with them, then they just smile basically and take it. So what's he trying to tell us when he's talking about all that? It's in about whatever 4 or 5 verses there to where he's talking about that. What's he trying to relay to us? What's the purpose of that, I guess, is what I'm asking.
He's mad at the way they're behaving.
Right.
He spent so much time there and now he feels like they turned their backs on him.
Okay, I agree. What else? What's he trying to get them to do?
Live their faith.
Every
day. No matter what the world looks and says about them or sees of them, live their faith.
Here's a question for you. Let's say Paul was on his way to church here today, and he's driving down the road, and he sees what we see. What do you think he'd do about that? And I use that as Patty and I come down Doug a while ago. And, you know, we've had this conversation before when we were living in Southlake. It was like the Tour de France every Sunday morning going toward our house down Dove. I mean, it'd be 15, 20, 30 bicyclers and all that stuff. And then you go a little further and you see joggers, people out running, see people in the parks and all that. Now, there again, they may have gone to church early morning or whatever. I'm not saying that they didn't, but I'm kind of guessing they probably hadn't. What do you think Paul would do about that? You think he'd drive by and just not say anything to any of them? I mean, it's kind of what he's talking about right here. So what do you think he would do? Would he stop?
Well, he's talking to Christians. He's talking to followers right now. So
right.
I'm not so sure. I think he'd be all over us for maybe not do that job.
That's my point. That's my point right there.
I think he comes straight here and gets dressed.
Because when he was walking to church or the synagogue or wherever, I'm sure he passed people on the road who were not heading in that direction, but even back then.
Right.
Whole thing is nowhere in the Roman Empire was the first day of the week a holiday. So people then weren't normally off on Friday, on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
They had to work, so he wouldn't have seen much like that, I don't think. I mean,
this footnote says, no matter how committed believers are, they must constantly be reminded of things they are apt to forget.
Well, I knew one man that way. It was my stepfather. And I don't care whether he was buying gas, grocery store, anybody he met, he knew where this, whether their soul was saved or not when he left. I mean, mm-hmm. He never failed to talk to him about the
mm-hmm.
church life.
That reminds me of Keith's father. He made up a little card. He made little cards with his name on it, and he had a scripture on the back.
Mm-hmm.
He passed them to cashiers. He passed them to everybody. And then he started ordering just big old boxes of Bibles.
Mm-hmm.
He just ordered them. So he had big, big boxes in his room all the time, and he would give them to the person cleaning. He would give them, because he was living in a living, assisted living, whatever. He would just hand, he would take a couple with him and hand them to the banker.
Yeah.
He said, this is just, you know, changed my life and I want to share it with you. And that's all he had to say about it. And he would give everybody a card, every person he came in contact. So this man was, what, 90? And he was still had so much fervor. That was a leader.
My stepfather used tracts. He always took tracts with him.
He just gave him the Bible. He just gave him out. And just he got low, he'd order another crate of them.
What do you think? What do you think Paul was telling the people of the, you know, that were wealthy, you know, about their children? What do you think he was trying to tell them? I mean, here's people, like you said, that you've got everything. So what is it he's trying to tell them? What do you think that they were doing? I mean, it doesn't specifically say this is exactly what they were doing, but it kind of leads you into it. So with his leadership style, what was he trying to tell them to do?
Buy yourself into heaven with all that money. That's not going to make it.
Right.
You can't keep your priorities straight.
Right.
I think he's being sarcastic.
Do you?
Yeah, I think he's saying, you ain't got nothing. You think you got everything.
Right.
You got nothing.
Right.
And
it's a dangerous mindset.
And but the other thing I think, I'm going to have to find my way out of here. Paul,
you're on your own.
You can go ahead and back your chair up a little bit.
Yeah. Paul, the notion I get from this is the message is I am very, very humble and really proud of it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
proud of my humility.
Right.
So, because he's always doing that and then telling you how wonderful he is.
Mm-hmm. I thought it's kind of interesting that he said, imitate me and don't imitate Christ. Every place else in the Bible is when somebody makes a statement, says, be like Christ. And Paul, throughout the New Testament, will tell you, be like me. So I think that's what you're saying. Right?
But see, I kind of take that, and I look at that a little bit differently, and Patty and I talked about that a little bit. I look at that a little differently as Christ is not right here and you can't see him. And so I'm following Christ because of what Christ had done for me. So look at me because I'm about as close as you're going to find here in the heavenly, in the physical body. And to these people here, and if you look at people that have got a lot of money, got everything in the world, and don't know what to look for to begin with, and we're kind of in a society that way right now. People just, you know, until you put something in front of them, they don't believe it about half the time. So I'm kind of wondering in some sense if that's not the case with Paul. What do y'all think? Somebody over here.
I think that he's saying that the honor of Christian life takes service and sacrifice.
Right. Absolutely.
And that they had forgotten that.
Somebody walks up to you and says, I want you to be just like me. Just be just like me and you'll be perfect. How do you take that?
Well, I'm not going to take that well without an exclamation first.
But they knew Paul. They knew just how to take it because they've seen him and they saw. I can't even imagine what he would be to be in his presence, Paul's presence, because he's.
But none of the other apostles do that. Peter didn't do it. No one else did it.
I don't think they had his personality. Paul's personality is so strong that you take it exactly how he meant it. I don't think you'd take it wrong. Yeah. But you'd have to know him, and you'd have to know how he...
Well, and I think that's true with a lot of people. You have to know about him before you can actually read into what they it is they're telling you to begin with.
They did know him.
Yeah.
And I think they knew exactly what
he was. I mean, I know some people that would rub you completely wrong the minute you start talking to them, but if you know a little bit about them, you know it's one of the most giving people you've ever been around in your life. Yeah. They would do anything in the world for you. And that have money, but yet it's not with them. You wouldn't know they had money, but you know, you never know. What'd you have, Mickey?
This kind of guy, I'm saying, that mainly to the rich, and that you have to give the given tool. They didn't use that tool right away. If the rich, he can fund a lot of visionary funds, trips, and stuff, but if you don't use it, you're wasting your tool that was given to you by God. You know, they were able to make money. If they had used it the right way, they could have helped further the cause. They didn't use their what was given to them in the right way.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think Christ picked Paul out of a crowd or picked on him to begin with?
Well known.
What else?
You're from one of the lead families.
Yeah. What else? What was it about Paul that Christ thought? Here's somebody I'm fixing to change his whole life so that he can change lives of others.
He knew his heart. He was dedicated to being a Jew, to what he believed.
Mm-hmm.
He was just misguided.
And didn't mind telling you about
it.
And being a Roman citizen and a great scholar made him able to go to the Greek communities, Roman communities, and as we've always said, the apostle to the Gentiles.
Mm-hmm.
So that he's uniquely qualified to do that.
Okay, well, I'm going to circle back around to my question that I started the class with. Now that we've talked a little bit about Paul, and especially in the last just couple of minutes, what makes a good leader? I mean, is it somebody that's quiet all the time? I'm talking about a leader. I'm not talking about somebody that's just a good example, because a lot of people are good examples because of what they do, but it doesn't make them a good leader. People are not going to follow them. They may want to imitate them because of what it is they do. They're giving and loving. Guys, we have so many people in this church here that you would never know that they ever did anything, and they are doing something all the time. I mean, they're either giving to people, they're taking stuff to people, they're helping people, they're calling for them, they're taking them doctor's appointments, they're taking them food, they're singing about them. You'd never know it. And it, honestly, the way it should be. You know, it tells us not to know what right hand, left hand, what it's doing. So we're not supposed to boast about that. But now that we've talked a little bit about Paul, what kind of leader? Tell me somebody that you think is a good leader. Give me another name. I mean, we had some to begin with. Did you think of anybody else since then? And think, well, you know, actually that person really was a good leader. Could have been a past president if you want it to be. Could be, it could be anybody. Could be anybody in your life.
I thought of somebody that I'm sure there are some in here who won't know him because he's been gone a long time, but there's a man named Skipper Chapman.
Yeah.
Somebody told me about an incident in a men's business meeting where there was some disagreement and everybody was wanting to talk and there were people, you know, kind of talking over each other. And the person who told me this said Skipper raised his hand to say something and everything shut off immediately because they wanted to hear what he had to say. I don't even know what he said, but mm-hmm. it was to me, that's a leader who has already lived a life that can command that kind of attention from people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, in the previous verse, or in the previous chapter, you know, when it's talking about Cephas and Apollos and also Paul, do we look at all three of those as leaders? obviously they're mentioned a lot in the Bible. Do we look at them as leaders? Do you look at Paul as a leader? I mean, first of all, let's establish that. Do you look at Paul as a leader?
I think a quality for me of a leader is someone who helps others become their best and brings out their potential. And Paul definitely did that by many different ways, but that to me is an example of a leader, how they do that to get to that point, but to get people to, they lead them to, their, to so that they become leaders.
I thought of Eleanor Roosevelt.
Okay.
Because the way she affected social change and humanitarian efforts.
That'd be a good one. It's good.
You know, Chauncey, like, when we read this stuff, we got to remember the apostles were direct, almost a direct ascension of God.
Right.
God was inspiring their actions, their words, their the things they were doing. And I was reading here in my footnotes, if you go over to 2 Corinthians 10, if you really almost, we all really almost put that in context with what we're reading here, because Paul over in 2 Corinthians 10 is defending himself against those who have been slandering him.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps to kind of know that that's why in 1 Corinthians letter he's talking about imitate me, because over in 10 he defends his ministry, he defends why he's doing what he's doing, and he talks about I may be timid in person but bold when I write, when I'm away, and so forth. And it's a good good points that he makes about don't be of this world again, that some of these guys that are slandering, they're trying to almost act like he's kind of crazy.
Right.
And he's saying, we're not of this world. No.
You know, I'm right in context of that. In 14, it says, I'm writing this not to shame you, but to warn you as my dear children. Even if you had 10,000 guardians in Christ, you do not have many fathers, for in Christ Jesus I became your father through the gospel. Therefore, I urge you to imitate me. And that, to me, is telling me that right there, not that it's not about me, it's more about where I, you know, what I have done through Christ to help you follow me, because Christ is not right here in front of you right now.
Right.
And there again, I could be looking at that wrong too, obviously. But it says, and for this reason I have sent to you Timothy, my son whom I love, who is faithful in the Lord. He will remind you of my way of life in Christ Jesus, which agrees with what I teach everywhere in every church. So that's telling me right there that he's saying, I do this because of Christ Jesus. It's not me at that point in time. It's about I'm following Christ, and this is why I'm asking you to imitate me, because I do this. And as arrogant, I think, as he probably was, in a sense, he's still saying, I'm pretty much right. But there again, I think it's none of the ones we're talking about. I think he had to know it, to know whether he felt like that way or not.
I don't think there's any arrogance, because he said everything with what Patty was saying, and the piggyback on Skip. I mean, it's all about motivating groups. It's not just making one person. You're making an entire room. You know, that's what those great speakers, you know, you're talking about, mm-hmm. great leaders. They can make the whole room. They can motivate everyone in their own place, wherever they are, with one speech, mm-hmm. with one letter. They can motivate masses because you sense they're caring. And you sense their compassion, and they're real, and that's what motivates. And if you can write one letter to motivate thousands and hundreds, you know, that's to this day.
Who wrote the greatest speech ever?
That's amazing.
In our time. Who wrote the greatest speech ever? Huh?
Abraham Lincoln.
What was it?
Oh, our time.
That's right. Winston Churchill got up, and all he said was, never, never give up. That's it. And, of course, it's been remembered forever. And it may be because it was short and they didn't want him to go into it. Whoa, best speech ever.
That's just the last paragraph.
Huh?
That's the last paragraph I've ever seen.
Right. But that, you know, that's always resonated forever because people remember that.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, one of my basketball players gave me a deal, you know, one of the typical coaches things at the end of it. And that's, you know, it was his comment, never, never give up, you know, and...
Maybe he's also saying, trying to tell them, I'm not just telling you what to do. I do this myself. And mm-hmm. he's showing them, he is telling them, but he's also showing them. And he practiced what he preached.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't just stand up and, you know, tell them all what to do, and then he didn't necessarily do it. But he showed them along the way, too.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think we perceive arrogance, but they're really confident. It's confidence. Mm-hmm. And because he could, now here he says, some of you become arrogant as if I were not coming to you. I will come to you soon, and then I will find out not only how these arrogant people are talking, but what power they have. So he's, you know, he's getting on to them again, saying, why are y'all fighting over whether I'm coming to you or you? I'm coming. Then we'll find out who it is that's spreading these things, because you're not imitating what I'm trying to show, which is my Christ-like life. I think he was very confident, but I think I can see how people, I mean, I know I do that. I'll see someone think, man, they really think they're all that. And when I give them a chance, if I should in the first place, they're really a very confident person.
Well, I think a person that's a true leader, I mean, obviously they have to be confident, because they're going to make decisions that not everybody's going to agree with. You know, in the world that I was in, we were always laughing about decision about making a game or whatever. And my comment was, well, I can assure you after the game, I'm not going to go into coach's office and curl up in a little ball and suck my thumb because I'm worried about who's mad at me. You know, I just wasn't going to do that, you know, because you couldn't do that. You had to make decisions, and, you know, and you hoped you made all the right ones or the best you possibly could. And then it's the same way here. And I think Paul was that way when he was going to the churches. You know, to me personally, is if it hadn't been for him, they'd have just been continuing to scatter everywhere, because really they weren't trying to get them all back together again. And that's what he's talking about with the wealthy and the kids and all that. They're beginning to kind of scatter and go and do what they want to and all that kind of stuff. And there again, if you look at that in the society we're in today, we kind of have that same build where people kind of scatter and going and doing what they want to do when they want to do it instead of focusing on one thing. And I think that's why I brought that up, Paul. I think Paul would be standing here this morning really getting after you about, you know, this is not about Sunday morning. And it's not about us sitting here right now. It's about how you're affecting lives 7 days a week, and not here. These people are singing to the choir. They're here. But then what about all the people that you see at Walmart or you see here or there? The one guy used to, and I've said this a million times, and he was one of the most different people that I've ever been around, and that was Dick Solomon. And is that right? Not Dick.
Don.
And but that guy, he would go to Walmart and bring three people back to church with him. I mean, he'd just do it, and he'd stay after them for quite some time. I mean, that was what he did, and that's what he was good at. And it didn't matter who you were, he'd go over and find you and start talking to you. And the next thing you know, he'd be talking to you about God and Christ and telling you where you should be and asking them where they are and all that kind of stuff. And that's what he was really good at. You know, and I just can't imagine, you know, when I look at people like that, I wish I was a whole lot more like that. What a blessing that he is. And then with Paul and his leadership style, I'm sure he probably rubbed a lot of people wrong. But also, in the back of his mind, there again, I'm obviously reading into that, but in the back of his mind, he had to be thinking that, you know what, Christ gave me a second chance, and that's why Christ put me where I'm at today, and he put me here to do this. Because he said I could do it. And then, I don't want to miss one person. Because if I miss that one person, then that's one person that might not get into heaven. Because I just thought, well, I'll just walk on by and go on. And that's the thing I think that bothers me as a person and as a Christian, is passing up that opportunity when it's sitting right there in front of me, whether it's at Walmart or wherever it is. And you just think, you know, maybe even that person even kind of brings it up to you a little bit, maybe opens the door. And, you know, as a Christian, we're supposed to open that door all the way. Once they even touch it a little bit, we should open it up and step into that door with them and help them. Yes, ma'am.
I know I arrived late, but I think he's also saying, you know, sometimes when you're a new Christian, you don't know what to do or
sure.
Where to go. And it doesn't matter where you are in your faith, in your belief. Look at me, you know. Mm-hmm. If you need direction, look at me, look how I'm living my life, you know, and then maybe customize it to you, because it's between you and God. But at least for a starting point, I'm coming to you to show you what you should be doing, or coming to you to show you where you can start.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Skip, that's a good point.
I didn't have my hand up.
Oh, I thought you said something.
You kind of got to go a different lesson that comes from the same thing we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Paul and Peter were personality-wise
right.
different. And so when they both were converted, their basic personality did not change. It's mm-hmm. just where they aimed it and what they were doing. Because Peter was still rash and given to talking without a filter at times. And Paul was real articulate and real, but I still say part of his deal was you had to define him. You'd have to say he had a very high opinion of himself.
Oh, yeah. 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 Professor Pinkham.
You know what I was going to say too, because I went back as we were talking and I read the bottom part of 3 and then I read through 4, and I think what Paul is basically saying here also, because he told them not to, he didn't want them to give any place to human leadership. And then when I got to the 6th verse, because basically what's happening is that people are pitting leaders against one another. And that's what he's telling them, that they shouldn't do that. And when you read verse 6, like toward the bottom of it, well, I'll just read it all. It says, now, brothers and sisters, I have applied these things to myself and Apollos for your benefit, so that you may learn from us the meaning of the saying, do not go beyond what is written. Then you will not be puffed up in being a follower of one of us over against the other.
Right.
And see, basically, that's what they're doing. It's like they're pitting this leader against this leader, and this leader against that leader, when basically Christ is our leader.
Exactly.
And so it's like when I looked at the title of this little section, it says Paul is giving them the nature of true apostleship. So he, as we read this, he's telling them what true apostleship should look like. And it's that if you are a great leader, I shouldn't belittle the fact that you're a great leader. You know, if you're leading people to Christ. And if Paul is a great leader, Apollos is a great leader, we shouldn't be pitting those two people against each other, because the common goal here is to win others to Christ and to live a Christ-like life. And then as I read through this, Paul is, you know, he's just telling them things that you should be looking for in a leader to show that they are, living the way that Christ would have us to live. He says that... I guess we really don't have time to just go through it, but it's like when I read it, I don't see Paul as being arrogant. I just see Paul as being put into a position because they have belittled the fact that he is an apostle and they prefer him. And, we go to all these Bible studies, and I think that someone taught us that Apollos was an eloquent speaker. Mm-hmm. And they said that Paul really was not great. He may not have been an eloquent speaker, but, you know, of course, he knew the word of God. And then, just like anything else, is that if this guy's a good preacher, and this guy's maybe his words are not as good as another person, you'll say, well, you put this guy on a pedestal because of the way that he actually can speak to you, and you belittle what someone else can do. Mm-hmm. And I think if we go back through it and we read it, we can see that Paul is just trying to tell them, I don't think that it ever has been about him. It's always been about Christ. Mm-hmm. You know, from what I can tell here, and he's just telling, you know, people that what they should look for as they, he says that we are fools for Christ, but you are so, and he's being arrogant to them, because it's like they figure that they know everything. And he's telling them that we are fools for Christ. We are weak, but you are strong. You know, the apostles are weak, but you're strong. Say, we are honored, you are honored, and we are dishonored. To this very hour, we go hungry and thirsty. We are in rags, and we are brutally treated. We are homeless. It's the sacrifices that the apostles are making to bring the word, you know, to people. So he's just kind of pointing out, you know, those things to try to open up eyes of the people.
Mm-hmm. So. You know, at the very end there, too, and I'll end with that. And I didn't actually get to that, but there again in 21 it says, what do you prefer? Shall I come to you with a rod of discipline, or shall I come to you in love with a gentle spirit? So basically saying, which one do you want, people? Because, you know, you can't have it all. So you're going to get one or the other. So Jack Johnson was that guy right there, the rod with discipline. That was our superintendent. Me, a quick prayer for us, and then let's go.